Baseball can be many things to many people, and its place in our lives kind of evolves, I think, throughout the years. Certainly it has evolved through through my years. It's, you know, it's a game to be played. It's a connection between generations. It's an icebreaker between strangers. And some of my most significant memories are linked to baseball from my childhood. And I'm really happy to have with us today over the phone, Andrew Blauner. Andrew is co-editor with Lee Gutkind of a collection of 20 baseball essays from 20 great writers titled Anatomy of Baseball. It's published by SMU Press. Andrew is a literary agent in New York City and editor of the book Coach, 25 Writers Reflect on People Who Made a Difference. Lee is the founding editor of Creative Nonfiction and a prize-winning author of more than a dozen books, including The Best Seat in Baseball. Andrew Blauner joins us today, and really pleased to have him with us. And I hope as we talk with him, you'll join in with your conversation and with your questions and with your comments. Maybe you've got some remembrances. I have some great remembrances of baseball. And I still play. I don't play baseball anymore. I play softball. But I still enjoy the game. And a lot of my great memories come from watching with my dad and playing some catch. Anyway, you might have some remembrances or maybe some questions or comments as we visit with Andrew. And I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. And also you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Andrew Blauner, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome, and thank you very much. That was a great introduction.
I've really enjoyed. You know, I've read, I think, 16 of the 20. I haven't quite finished the book, but what a wonderful collection of authors.
Well, we were blessed. We made sort of an A list and a wish list, and you hit the nails on the head. I mean, baseball is the great uniter and an icebreaker and crosses generations. And, you know, as you know from having looked through the book, there are very few just sort of exclusively baseball writers or sports writers, even because the sport, as it always has, is transcendent across age and geography and everything else. So we were very fortunate to get, starting with Yogi Berra, to write the introduction and just go down the list of, you know, what we wanted to be an all-star team.
Yeah, and you really got an all-star group here for sure. And even with Yogi Berra, I had it's a nicely written piece with a big laugh right at the end. I hate to give it away, but I laughed out loud when I got to that last
it's
paragraph.
It's classic Yogi. As you said, I'm a literary agent in my real life, my day job, and Yogi's actually a client of mine. So, you know, a special thanks to him for his generosity. And in case you hear some noise in the background, I apologize for that. But maybe fittingly enough, I'm actually in Central Park. I couldn't be in the office, but I tried to find the quietest place in New York City I could find. And coincidentally, and maybe fortuitously, it's the middle of Central Park overlooking a bunch of baseball diamonds, some of which are the ones I played on when I was a kid.
Well, I tell you what, I got my bag out this morning and I looked in at my Louisville Slugger Big Daddy mitt that I've had for 20 some years now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be off playing softball tonight. It caught some baseballs too, but we're now in the softball mode, I'm afraid. And some of your writers are in that mode too.
Many of them, yeah. Most of them, all of them, I'd say.
pretty much everybody. You know, when I got the book, I wondered if I was going to invite you guys on, and got the book, and I read the foreword, Lee's comments, and mentioned a couple of his former students, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to, before I decide, I'm just going to go to those two chapters and read those two chapters.
Mm.
And I read, I think, Caitlin Herrick's,
mm-hmm.
And Jake Young, I think, was the other.
Mm-hmm.
And both wonderfully fascinating stories, and I said, "Oh, we've got to get this on Wisconsin Public Radio."
Well, thanks for that. Yeah, and part of the pleasure of this was we call it an all-star team of writers, but the nice thing is that we were able to include some of the kinds of writers you're talking about now to go along with the brand names of Frank DeFord and Roger Angel and
George Plimpton
and some of the others. So it's a real mix, and I have to give full credit to Lee Goodkin, my co-editor, as you mentioned, who came up with the idea and really fostered the idea, starting with, as you said, his students of creative writing that he teaches.
Oh, I mean, they're just absolutely wonderful, and when you, as soon as you mentioned George Plimpton, rest his soul, his is a hilarious story about what goes on in the lonely wastelands of right field.
Exactly, and you mentioned softball. It actually applies maybe even a little more to softball,
yes,
than good old fashioned hardball, in the sense that right field being the place where maybe you try to hide your weak link as far as the field, because assuming most people are bat right-handed, mm-hmm, and they pull the ball, right field tends to get the least amount of action. And so the late great George Plimpton writes an entire piece sort of deconstructing right field and, saying because of the lack of action out there, that it's the ideal place for invention and reverie. And I think he writes that, if Einstein had played baseball, he probably would have been a right fielder. George's is one of three classic reprints of previously published stories. The other 17 are all originals, but I couldn't fathom putting together a book like this without including, those three that we included from other publications. Again, Plimpton, Roger Angel, and Frank DeFord.
Yeah, and DeFord's piece on baseball caps is wonderful, and we can talk about that. But and we've got callers on the line with comments or questions for you too. But when you put this together, what was your goal with this? Obviously, your goal was to put together a book that people would be interested in and would purchase. But I'm not putting it in the best words here, and I want you to tell me.
Mm-hmm.
What you had in mind?
Right. Well, it's a more than a valid question. It's a question we asked ourselves. And Lee Goodkin and I, again, my co-editor, we both work in publishing, and we both know that if most people we know, if they spent the rest of their lives doing nothing but reading, you'd probably not get to all the books that you want to read. So the last thing that we needed was just another book for the sake of publishing a book. But given our love of baseball, we thought that there's never been anything quite like this, where it's a collection not just of people waxing about baseball in general, whether they love it or don't love it, but taking a specific aspect of baseball and really diving into it and immersing into it. And we've touched on a couple of them, whether it's George Plimpton writing about right field, or Frank DeFord writing about baseball caps, or Roger Angel writing about the ball itself. The title of the book, again, is Anatomy of Baseball. And we wanted to break it down into its parts, and at the same time know the old saying that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And, more than all of that, we wanted to, I think we were tired, and I think we know a lot of people who were just sort of tapped out on hearing about steroids and scandal and corruption and money and all that, the sort of modern day aspects of the game,
yeah,
in a sense, and get back to sort of the basics and the purity and the beauty of the game, and what all of us really connected with when we were kids. That's what we were striving for. For people who really wanted to have a bit of nostalgia and recapture again that sort of primal connection to the game. And the timing, obviously we wanted to get it out in time for graduations and Father's Day and, the
yep,
season itself. But that was kind of the motivation going into it.
Well, it's a collection of anybody, even if you don't pay attention to baseball very much. almost all of us, I think, have experiences back from when we were kids. But the writing, you take a piece like Elizabeth Bobrick's on Oriole Magic. You don't have to be a baseball fan to enjoy that great writing.
Well, again, you hit a very important point, which is if there's been one so-called criticism of the book so far, it's been that, hey, you know, this purports to be a baseball book, and it's not just baseball. I mean, all the pieces are about some aspect of baseball, but it's exactly as you say, sort of, it's not balls and strikes, and, it has appeal for, you know, people of all genders, ages, across the country, and you know, the you asked what we were looking for. The first thing we wanted was top-notch writing. Good writers, whether they were brand names or not going in. But again, you hit it on the head that it's not by any means just for baseball fans. If you're a baseball fanatic, it's an embarrassment of riches. But at the same time, if you're someone who loves a great story collection, or reads the best American essays, just likes good writing, and happens to also like baseball, then it's something for you as well.
Absolutely. Well, Bill in Milwaukee is online. Bill, thank you for calling. Hello.
Yes. Oh, my pleasure. I am definitely going to get this book. And as a former deservedly so right fielder, I have had a memory and a question. The memory was I had snuck out, this is many years ago, to watch one of the first games after the Brewers came to Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first major league game I had ever been to in my life, and they hit a ball, and I caught it.
Whoa.
And I thought, I was so thrilled, but I thought, you know, I'm going to share this moment, and I handed it to this child who was maybe 5 or 6, and he threw it back onto the field. But it was a great memory. My question is, ignoring, you know, not going into steroids or drug testing, what one rule do you think they should change? I mean, just the actual game itself, if any, at this point. But if you had your choice, what one rule would you change?
Ooh, wow.
That's a great question, and if some of my clients were here, you know, John Thorne and Andy Zimbalist, some great baseball writers and thinkers, I'd crib, check their crib sheets. I guess I'm a purist, so I guess my gut instinct, without thinking about it too long, is I'd like to see something uniformed as far as the DH goes, and I'm not unique in this way. I mean, I think we should either have it in both leagues or not have it. You know, now that we have interleague play, again, just off the top of my head, that's one thing I'd like to see. But if given time, I'd probably come up with a laundry list, some of which would be better than that. But everybody has their pet issue, whether it's the All-Star game or the time between pitches, all kinds of things. But what would yours be?
Honestly, the same exact one. I think it should be uniform, and I just like the idea the pitcher has to get up there. But I thank you, and I really am looking forward to this book.
You're gonna enjoy it, Bill. Doug in Oshkosh, we'll go to you next. Hi, Doug.
Hey, thanks. How are you?
Great.
I've kind of first of all, I don't like baseball.
You don't like baseball, okay?
No, I don't. And my dad, you know, when I was a kid, of course, I remember warm summer nights, and he would turn on the baseball game. And that sound of baseball, if I go on vacation, I put the sunroof back, and I'm going on vacation kind of smiling. I try to look for a baseball game because I love the sound of baseball.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really don't like baseball, but the sound of it is just that. I mean, I'm telling you, it's music to my ears.
I hear you. I mean, literally, and as I said, I'm looking at a bunch of kids playing right now, and it's not the same crack of the bat and the sound that you'd hear in Yankee Stadium or Fenway or where have you. But I know exactly what you mean. And sometimes I'll go to a game. It can be a Toledo Mudhens game, in if I'm in Ohio, just to sort of. I know exactly what you mean. There's something almost meditative about it. But, you know, in the intro to the show here, you mentioned that, you know, the game has evolved. But the other thing is that so much has stayed the same.
Yes.
That it's still 90 feet between the bases. It's still 60 feet, 6 inches. It's still, you know, 3 strikes and 4 balls. So despite all the changes, there's something, I think, comforting to people about the constancy and almost the reliability of it. But that's such an interesting comment by your caller about just the sounds of the game and somebody who doesn't intrinsically like the game. I mean, I happened upon my old chewed up copy of Catcher in the Rye the other day and had completely forgotten that good old Holden Caulfield travels around with his old his dead brother's baseball glove and the glove on which his brother in his idleness you know, had written poems on the glove. I mean, it's just, if you start thinking about it, it really just sort of transcends everything, and everyone seems to have some sort of connection to it.
Absolutely. Doug, thank you very much for calling. Our guest today, Andrew Blauner, is co-editor with Lee Gutkind of a collection of 20 baseball essays put together in a book titled Anatomy of Baseball, and it's published by SMU Press, and people like Roger Angel, Frank DeFord, Phil Deaver, some wonderful writers who have written about what baseball has meant to them in one way or another. You can join in with your questions at 1-800, or your recollections or remembrances. I love the stories. At 1-800-642-1234. Or in Madison at 263-1890. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking with Andrew Blauner about his book, Anatomy of Baseball, and really pleased to have him with us today. Again, if you'd like to join in, the number to call 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. You know, I was kind of pondering our last caller's comments about the sound of baseball, and got me thinking also about the writers, the baseball writers. And I think Elizabeth Bobrick, who was a fine writer herself, in her first piece ever written about baseball, I think she says, she discovered some wonderful writers, sports writers, who are people who were and are great writers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think she said she'd never paid any attention at all to the sports page. And while she was studying for her PhD in literature, I believe.
You know, she she again wrote about those great Orioles teams, and despite the fact I grew up in New York City, for some strange reason I grew up a Pirates fan, and so of course the Pirates and the Orioles played a couple times in the series. But exactly, I mean, sometimes you step back and yes, that was her piece in the book is her first baseball story, her first sports story of any kind, and if you think about some of the best writers in America, period. You know, whoever your favorite, whether it's Philip Roth or Richard Ford or John Updike, you could almost keep going through the list. And most of them, Don DeLillo, most have either written books that have baseball as a backdrop or are even more explicitly about baseball. You know, it was George Plimpton who said that the smaller the ball, the better the writing about the sport, which I guess would make golf. The king on that. But, you know, another one of the women writers in the book, woman named Susan Parabo, mm-hmm. You know, addresses the question of why so much writing, why so many books about baseball. And her speculation about that is she actually compares baseball to love, that there's just, you know, an endless... There's just kind of a bottomless pit, an endless amount to say about baseball, just as there is to say about love, and that it's just depends who you talk to and what angle they're coming from. But that's part, because the question does come up, especially if you work in publishing, as I do, what is it about baseball, writing and books that doesn't apply to some other sports.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's time for another caller here. Let's go to Heidi in Madison. Heidi, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I first want to tell you, Larry, how much I enjoy your show most days.
Thank you.
And I am calling because a topic that really hasn't been covered yet is baseball can keep one company if you listen to enough of the games on the radio.
Yeah.
I've been a Cubs fan all my life, glutton for punishment, I realize.
Yeah.
But I was sick in 2003, and, I mean, I was, like, almost in bed type sick. And that year, I spent many, many afternoons listening to Ron and Pat. And they kept me company, and I will be forever grateful, although it ended up very badly for the Cubs that year, to have that because it was almost like having friends to look forward to seeing every afternoon.
Yeah.
And that for me, baseball, I still associate it with me starting to get better.
Oh. Wow.
No, that's touching, and I'm really moved to hear that, and I can understand that as well. When I have a low moment or period or whatever in my life, some people reach for different things. My instinct is to check and see if the Yankees are in town, and if they're not, can't go to see a game. Yeah, exactly. But find it on the TV or on the radio, and it can have the kind of healing power you're talking about, and be a companion. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, thank you very much. I look at, you know, I'm a Brewers fan, and also I like the Cubs too. But Bob Uecker, you know, to listen to Bob, I can turn on the game, and if I turn it on in the middle of the game, I can usually tell the score or roughly the score by what Bob is talking about. Because if it gets out of hand, he starts telling, he'll tell stories.
Oh, well, that's the other thing I meant to mention, too, is that it's just maybe obvious or it's just inherent that, again, why so many stories, why so many books about baseball? There are so many breaks in the game. There's so many pauses between pitches, between innings, that when it comes to radio or TV, or if you're just sitting out at the game, there's so much time to fill. And how do people fill it with stories and recollections? And sometimes, the great Bob Uecker, they go off on tangents.
He is a master, and I'm glad he made it into the Hall of Fame. You can join in too at 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison, reach us at 263-1890 as we talk with Andrew Blauner about his book Anatomy of Baseball. You can email us too at talk@wpr.org. There are a few pieces in your book about gloves, first base, any gloves for that matter. And I enjoyed those pieces. You really have an affinity for your each of us, I think, who owns a glove. You know, I've had mine 20 some years, and I wouldn't do away with it for anything.
Well, right. Some people have called the whole project, a glove affair or a glove story. And, you know, again, there's been some comment that, well, there are three out of the 20 stories in the book are about gloves, which, you know, we had a lot more than those that people wanted to submit and have published. And obviously between the bat and the ball and the uniform and the crowd and everything else, there's something, though, about mitt. Stefan Fatsis, who some of your listeners may know as the author of the great book Word Freak, all about Scrabble. Stefan writes just a fantastic piece about his old, I think it's a Rawlings glove that I believe is 31 years old, so he's got yours beat by about 4 years. And, you know, Catherine Powers is a Boston Globe writer, and she writes about her glove. There's something, you know, I guess someone speculated that it's because the glove itself is physically what connects our bodies, you know, to the game itself. And someone else said, you know, think about how many possessions you have, objects you have from your childhood that you've kept and you preserve. And there's just something really primal there. So you hit on another a big theme of the book, which is, again, the glove story.
Lee in Cross Plains has a question or comment. Hi, Lee.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Got a comment. Mm-hmm. My baseball recollection. I got to go to the very first game ever played in Milwaukee County Stadium.
Oh, wow.
1953. Okay. Buddy of mine and I went and stood in line to get bleacher seats set out in right field. And I think that was Hank Aaron's very first game as a Milwaukee Brave. And Warren Spahn pitched. He's in the Hall of Fame. And it was the great experience of that, which people may not even remember anymore, was that late in the game, I don't even remember who they were playing, somebody hit a ball to right field, deep right field, and that's when the fences weren't so high as they are now. Billy Bruton was the right fielder for the Braves at that time. He was one of the few guys I ever knew who could turn at the crack of the bat, go to where the ball was, and turn around and catch it. He never seemed like he ever had to watch the path of the ball. Anyhow, at the crack of the bat, he turns and he heads for the wall. And the ball was over the fence. He caught the ball over the fence to save the game for the Brewers, or for the Braves, as they won their first game in Milwaukee County Stadium. And think about the fact that that's so old, that stadium isn't even there anymore.
Yeah.
Right, right.
That was very memorable. They actually let us, I was in high school, and they let us out of school to go
and see it.
Well, that's there's a lament by a lot of people that there aren't more day games. The other caller asked about a change in the game. I mean, you can't get away from the economics as much as you'd like to, and I guess that's what a lot of that's about. But a lot of the stories I hear seem to take place, well, certainly night games became part of the game. So many of the good old stories and the recollections are day games, and you can just almost, again, hear the sound and smell the hot dogs.
Yeah.
And that kind of catch reminds me of, the famous Willie Mays catch where he turns his back. I think it was off of Vic Wirtz in the World Series, which actually leads me to one other thought as far as baseball being a great uniter. Someone mentioned that it may be the only thing that Bill Clinton and George W. Bush can agree on, and that is who's the greatest all-around player. You could probably have some sort of trivia contest and some giveaway there if you wanted to, but I'll give it away that they both agreed that Willie Mays was the best all-around player that the two of them had ever seen. So, you can find common ground between those two. You can probably find it anywhere.
And Lee mentioned Warren Spahn pitching that first game, and I'm trying to remember the story. One of the people wrote about catching Warren Spahn in one of your pieces, and I can't remember which one. And it was during the war, I believe.
Oh, right, that might have been Michael Shapiro's piece about the Southwards. I mean, there are some references in the book to doubleheaders, which, people today, even kids, would know what a doubleheader is, but it's not the same thing today as it used to be, because now they're what you call, day-night doubleheaders, which, again, for better or worse, goes back to, the money in the game. And, even I'm only 43, only, but I can remember well being a kid and going to a doubleheader where it just meant play one game, they go in, take a little break, come out and play another one. Now, of course, a doubleheader means two separate admissions and gates and everything else. So, as we said before, a lot has evolved and continues to change, but so much happily remains the same.
Dave in Appleton is up next. Dave, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks for calling.
I got a quick story about Ernie Banks, and you were talking about recollections of ballparks and ball games. My younger brother and I used to go sit in the bleachers at Cubs Park. It used to cost us 50 cents to get in and sit in the bleachers. I think those tickets are somewhere around $15, $18 to sit in the bleachers today. But a story about Ernie Banks, at one time I worked for him. He used to own a car agency on the south side of Chicago called Nelson Banks Ford. And one evening, I was in the dealership late, and he and Ferguson Jenkins were playing a game called boxball. Boxball is taking a tennis ball, drawing a square on the wall, which is a strike zone. Ernie Banks had a broomstick in his hand, and they're playing boxball in the garage of the dealership. I mean, talk about a true love of a game.
Oh, that's a great story, Andrew.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, sometimes between baseball and softball and box, you know, I'm such a egocentric New Yorker, I suppose. I don't even know, did they always play stickball everywhere around the country and other cities? But, you know, it means different things to different people, but there's that great common denominator as well.
Yeah. Dave, thank you very much. Bob in Eau Claire will go to you. Hi, Bob.
Hey, good morning, guys. I'm happy to hear that the New Yorkers actually got some Pittsburgh love in them.
Our family.
Yeah, I grew up about 100 miles east of Pittsburgh in the middle of the Allegheny Mountains.
Uh-huh.
And I had an uncle who took me to Forbes Field to see the old Pirates when Roberto Clemente was the rising star. And I watched him do two things in one day that just amazed me. He had a wild swing, and sometimes a pitcher could really fool him badly, and he would corkscrew himself right into the ground. He pirouetted when he would swing if he missed the ball. And the pitcher did it to him twice, and both times he just looked horrible, and it was like, geez, this guy's going to be an easy out. And then after that, he bore down, and I'll be darned, with an 0-2 count, the guy threw some kind of a scroogey or whatever. It didn't even look like it was over the plate. And Clemente simply reached out and flicked at it and hit a home run. it was just amazing, because you could never imagine that he could have had that kind of power after, you know, the display of the going for the downs.
Well, that's, I mean, people talk about basketball being a game of adjustments and football too, but in a way, none or more than, it doesn't apply more than it does to baseball. And it's not just from game to game or at bat, but as you say, sometimes within the at bat. And I should mention, as long as we're talking about Pittsburgh, that my co-editor Lee Goodkin is a professor at University of Pittsburgh. He lives in Pittsburgh, and he's a through and through Pittsburgh guy. And as long as you mentioned Clemente, you know, one of my favorite writers who tried to get in this book was in the earlier collection that I edited about coaches. Is one of Madison's own, I believe, David Marinus.
Yes,
who wrote just a phenomenal book about Clemente that I recommend to everybody.
Yeah, it is. I was going to mention that myself. It is a phenomenal book for sure. Well, Bob, I thank you very much for calling. I want to give Jack a chance from Brookfield. Jack, hello to you.
Hi there. I'm amazed at how many different first Braves games there were at Audi Stadium. I, too, was there. I think I was 17, and the right fielder was Andy Pafko. Mm. The left fielder was Sid Gordon, and the center fielder was Billy Bruton.
Billy Bruton.
And he did not finish the ball game by making a catch over the fence. He did go over the fence, but he was the leadoff batter in the 10th inning in a tied ball game, and he put the first pitch over the fence. It was his only home run that year, and probably maybe his only home run in his career with the Braves.
Well, you know, that's kind of a that's kind of the fun thing about memories, isn't it, Andrew?
Exactly. I was you took the words out of my mouth. I mean, sometimes it's sort of separating the myth from reality, and sometimes it's just good old fashioned arguments and agreeing to disagree. And you know, I can't imagine it being more fierce anywhere than it is in New York, where you've got the Subway Series. But you know, I'm sure the Cubs and the White Sox, and it plays out everywhere. But it's not just rivalries; it's just you know, the great debates. All about the game, about the history, and who's the greatest, and how do you compare from one generation to another. And then you've got, yeah, just sort of what's urban myth and what's actual history.
Thanks, Jack. Norm in Birchwood, your turn. Hi, Norm.
Hi. I grew up in a small town, and small towns, as you know, all had baseball teams, and I was a pitcher, and I pitched for the Rockland baseball team. And I remember one in August was a hot day and a flannel uniform. I had to pitch 14 innings because we didn't have any relievers.
You know, well, go ahead, Andrew.
Well, no, it just, I'm sorry to just, this is part of the whole beauty of it. It's just, it's like peeling the onion. I mean, just one word or one conversation leads to four others. But I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's okay. My Norm mentioning that just reminded me that of one of my favorite memories. And with Father's Day coming up, my dad's passed on. But I think one of the best things we did every year was to go to Cottage Grove, Wisconsin, and watch the Cottage Grove home talent, the Cottage Grove Firemen, Volunteer Fire Department, sponsored the baseball team, and we watched the game in the cement bleachers at Fireman's Park in Cottage Grove, and that's a memory I'll carry forever.
Well, again, it's memories and it's moments today. I mean, not to get too overly sentimental about it, but
right.
You know, and it can be just a pickup game in a park in a small town, or it can be you know, a stadium with 50,000 people in it. You know, we're fortunate that the game has endured all of the trials and tribulations that it's had. I was recently watching, you know, the great Ken Burns documentary.
Yeah.
I think a 7-part documentary just called Baseball.
Yeah.
And it's remarkable to see, you know, basically all that baseball has gone through since its inception. Again, we're very happy to have been able to put together this book, and it's almost as trite as it sounds, it's almost our way of giving something back to the game that's given us so much.
Well, it's a wonderful book, Andrew, and you've got 20 wonderful essays, 20 great writers, and I thank you so much for being with us today to talk about it.
Oh, it's my great pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Andrew. Andrew Blauner is a co-editor with Lee Gutkind of the book Anatomy of Baseball. And again, I'll tell you, there's some wonderful writing in this book, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I hope you will take a look at it. It's a great book. Well, I tell you what, we're going to switch from baseball to apples, Apple computers, that is, coming up next. Joe Rhodes joins us again to talk Apple computers and accessories here on the Ideas Network.